understand directly. And you also get virakti. Very importantly, you also get virakti, which means detachment from other things that aren't related to Krishna. And that happens automatically and simultaneously when serving Krishna. So yes, the service propensity is meant for Krishna. And this is what Krishna consciousness is. It means directing our senses and our service activities to Krishna. And sometimes that's by degrees. As in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 12th chapter, Krishna says, first class thing is think of me all the time. Serve me with unalloyed devotion. Always hear about me 24 hours a day. But if you can't do that, he says, then just follow the rules and regulations of devotional service, and gradually you'll come to that stage. But what if you can't do that? Then he says, work for me. And what does that mean? Okay, I have a job, I'm making money, so what do I do with the money? That's a big deal, because that's the fruit of your work. If you give that, or part of it, to help spread Krishna consciousness, then you're giving to Krishna, and your mind and your energies will start going in that direction. That's also service to Krishna. That's by degrees. And if he can't do that, what does he say?
Give
to something. Start giving. Start the giving process. Because the more you give, the more you're coming into the realm of spiritual life. Spiritual life means giving. The Mahatmas, they're giving everything. They give their whole soul. Therefore, they grow. They become, you know, as big as the sky. A brahmana means generous, you know, always giving of everything for the service of Krishna. So yes, it means to direct our service propensity toward Krishna. You had a point?
I was just going to say that on this knowledge and our humility and pridelessness, wildly successful 12-step programs have a certain acronym. It's HOW, which is stands for honest, open, and willing. And they also talk about being teachable. So in other words, in order to receive this knowledge, you know, of 12-step programs, that is, one has to be teachable. So in order to be teachable, one has to be honest, open, and willing, which seems to go along with this whole pridelessness and humility and everything.
Excellent point. Right on the money. Thank you very much. So let's continue the purport. We're still on page number 71. And I just read this sentence past the 18th item where I said, these 18 items combine to form a gradual process by which real knowledge can be developed. And we heard the word gradual, which, what are some synonyms? Steps or degrees. So we can remember, like you just brought up 12-step programs. It's a step-by-step process. So Krishna consciousness is like that too. It's by degrees, by steps that we make advancement. And also, you thought I was going to get past this one sentence, right? No. In the Bhagavatam, Krishna says to Uddhava, Sve Sve Karma Nabhirata. He mentions that if one acts according to one's qualification, then this is considered a good quality. In other words, there's no reason to try to jump to a step that I'm not qualified for. If I work diligently where I am now, then naturally I'll come to the next stage, the next step. How many stages are there? Well, it's unlimited. I mean, we're always students. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he spoke to Prakashananda Saraswati, he told him that I'm murka, I'm a fool. Before my spiritual master, I'm a fool. I always remain in that position. And it doesn't matter. He's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's sannyasi. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But before his spiritual master, I'm a fool. Not that you act like a fool. Not that you make a fool of yourself. But you feel, I'm a fool, I'm open. So there are unlimited steps, and whatever position we're in, we should, whatever position we're qualified for, we should thrive in that position. And then naturally, by degrees, we'll be promoted by Krishna himself. Prabhupada put it like, when you join a corporation and you excel in your job, what happens? Well, somebody will notice, and they'll come along and say, hey, such and such is doing way more than their share, and they're doing better than others. And it's like, would you like to, you know, come to a board meeting and find out how to, you know, we'd like you to, you know, take a bigger role. And you get a bigger role. It happens in any kind of organization or company. When cream rises to the top, right? So in the same thing in spiritual life, when you excel in the position you're in now, and it doesn't matter where you are. I'll give you an example. In Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela, in the Mahaprakash section of the Chaitanya Bhagavat, he revealed that he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And when he was showing that he was God, his majestic form, he called all the devotees to come to worship him. And in the huge room full of devotees at Srivas Thakur's house, in the very back where no one could see, there was one very seemingly insignificant devotee. Her name was Duki. And she was the maidservant in the house of Srivas Thakur. During the Mahaprakash ceremony, where they were bathing Mahaprabhu, they were doing Abhishek, she was going to the Ganges and bringing these clay pots full of Ganges water and lining them up for the devotees. But she was very shy and humble, and she stayed out of view of everyone, including the Lord. But because she was doing her service so diligently, Mahaprabhu noticed those pots and how nicely they were lined up and filled just to the top. And in the whole crowd of devotees, he said, "Who put those pots there?" And they said, "Oh, this is, where is she? Here she is. This is our maidservant, Duki." Duki means unhappy. And he said, "From now on, your name is Suki." And meant that he personally recognized her service. So you can be at the back of the room, doesn't matter. Krishna's within the heart. He understands our intention. He understands our service mood. Bhava Grahi Janardana means he knows our bhava. He knows our intention. That's what's important. And if I'm in it, I may have an insignificant role as a, join the temple, please sweep the temple. Well, not such an insignificant role. Look at Maharaj Prataparudra. Because he came out of his palace and he swept before the Rathyatra cart, Mahaprabhu accepted him as his confidential devotee and embraced him. So wherever we are, if we take this position that I'm qualified for this now, and if I put my heart and soul into my service, however imperfectly I do it also, but if I put my heart and soul and my full intention is to serve Krishna properly, serve the devotees properly in that position, then Krishna will know. He'll know. Bali Maharaj, when he was in the assembly of demons, he was a demon. And he was, how is everybody? Is it too stuffy in here? Let's ask Dianini. Is it too warm? Do you need a little more air?
It's not too bad.
Is everyone okay? We could use some air. You want more air? I'll put you in charge. Okay. Bali Maharaj was in the assembly of demons, and they were doing a huge sacrifice. And as they were doing it, Vamanadev, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, came in. What did he look like? He was a dwarf. And he was a little brahmachari, right? He had a deer skin. Just imagine how beautiful he was. In fact, Bali Maharaj's sister was there, and she wanted to embrace him and take him home. You know, he was so cute, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Bali Maharaj, even though he was in the assembly of demons, he was a great devotee of the Lord. And when he saw Vamanadev coming, in his heart, everything he surrendered to him right then. Right there. But because he was in a social situation, he was the emperor, and all the demons were depending on him, and they were like, you know, "You're our man." He couldn't just, you know, get down from his throne and offer obeisances to this dwarf that he knew was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But in his heart he was. In his heart he gave everything away. He said, "My heart, everything, my head is at your feet." And the Lord knew that, and he rewarded him. In fact, he became his doorkeeper. He became his doorkeeper. He became the servant of his own devotee out of gratitude for the devotion that Bali Maharaj had in his heart. And of course, we know that he came and asked for 3 paces of land as a donation. He said, "I want a donation." He said, "Sure, what do you want?" 3 paces of land. He said, "Take more. I'm the emperor. I can give you whatever you want. Why just 3 paces of land?" He said, "Well, if I'm not satisfied with 3 paces of land, I won't be satisfied with 3 islands. Good instruction. Learn to be satisfied, and whatever you get, then you'll become happy. Be happy with gain which comes of his own accord. And when he gave him these three paces of land, Vamanadeva took everything. And then he said, with his first two steps, he took everything. He said, where do you want the third one? How are you going to pay? I took two steps. You owe me one more. Pay. What can I do? And so put it on my head. And that was his mood, Bali Maharaj. And for that, the demigods said they couldn't imagine how much he was rewarded, how much Bali Maharaj was rewarded by the Lord because of his mood of surrender. So this is the important aspect, that whatever situation we're in, even if it's an incompatible social situation, I feel bound down by my duty to the world. I can't fully express my devotion, nor can I fully enact the devotional principles that I know I should. But that's my intention, and by degrees I'm going to work towards that. Krishna understands that intention, and he will fully reward each and every devotee accordingly. Ye yatam mam prapadyante tamstataiva bhujami aham. Mama vart manavartante manushya partasarvasha. What does that verse mean? As they surrender unto me. And what is the verse number? How do you find it? Well, let me bring your attention to why we put these book stands out. On the book stand, you'll find a Bhagavad Gita. You also find a shloka book. And if you hear someone give in the class, they quote a shloka. You'll notice if you watch in the front row, keep your eyes on Rakshit Jariwala right up here. When devotees say verses, he'll grab the book and he'll go through the index. If he doesn't know where the verse is, in the back of the book, pull out your Bhagavad Gita and look on page 787. Okay, 796. Thank you, Dainini. Okay, 797. Okay, now someone, look at page 797. Don't say anything, Dainini Prabhu. Why did he bring your attention to this particular page? Page 797. Huh? Vanamali says that's where the verse can be found. So here's how it's found. On this page, if you go down alphabetical order, you say, Ye yatam mam prapadyante, you'll find it right here. Ye yatam mam prapadyante. And then it'll tell you where the verse is. And if you know the first or the third line, if you hear the first or the third line and you turn to this index, then you can look up the verse, you can find it. Now, if you hear another verse that's not in the Bhagavad Gita, there's a high probability that it's in this book. These are shlokas that were most commonly quoted by Srila Prabhupada. They're compiled in one book. And there's a similar way of looking them up in this book as well. So if you get good at this, when you're listening to a class, you can either make a notation in a little notebook. Good if you carry like pen, and maybe if you have a little notebook like this, and make note of the verses that you hear, where they were, and then later on you can look them up. And when you get in that habit, you'll start seeing where they are and orient yourself towards the book. That's what the orient means. You got to get oriented. Let's see if we can get past this one sentence. These 18 items combine to form a gradual process by which real knowledge can be developed. Page 71 of the Sri Upanishad. Okay, Ajahn Prabhu and his whole family and clan is leaving now. Hare Krishna, thank you for coming. Somebody can please give them prasadam. Thank you for coming. When are you coming back? Okay, we'll be counting the minutes. Hare Krishna. Good to see you. Give our best to everybody in Folsom. And ask everyone to come down next time, and we'll all come up too. Except for these, all other methods are considered to be in the category of nescience. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, a great acharya, maintained that all forms of material knowledge are merely external features of the illusory energy, and that by culturing them, one becomes no better than an ass. This same principle is found here in Sri Upanishad. By advancement of material knowledge, modern man is simply becoming converted into an ass. Well, let's analyze this. What is an ass anyway? Has anybody ever met one before? I have. I was just in Vrindavan. One day when I was walking on Parikram, I met an ass. He was walking along next to me. I had to go right next to him because the Parikram mark's getting pretty crowded these days. There's cars, camels, elephants, people, and you know, sometimes you get squeezed in and you got to find your way through. So I just happened to find myself right next to an ass. and he was carrying a huge load of sand on his back. And I asked him, I said, what are you doing here, you know? I said, I offered my obeisances, but I humbly inquired, what are you doing here carrying all this stuff? And he said, you know, at the end of the day, my master, who's right behind me with a stick, he gives me a little bit of grass. And I said, you know, I hate to break this news to you now because you're halfway through your life, but there's grass everywhere here, you know. I didn't want the owner to hear because he would have really gotten uptight, but I told him, you know, hey, grass everywhere. And he was like, no, that's, I can only get it from a master. So an ass generally has this mentality that I have to work for a master in order to get grass. But there's grass everywhere. If you know, Jesus told his disciples, look around. Look at the birds in the field. They're getting their food. What do you have to worry about? Don't worry so much about this other stuff. You know, worry about your spiritual life. That was the idea. So, but asses are committed to this idea of maintaining my bodily existence. And it's also said, I've never seen this principle put in place, but if you take a carrot and put it on a stick and hang it in front of an ass, he'll walk after it all day long and thinking that he'll get it. It's actually a metaphor for material life, that the carrot's, you know, just in front of me and I'm thinking I'm going to get it, so I keep walking, but it's equidistance because it's on a stick. So this is what an ass is. By advancement of material knowledge, modern man is simply becoming converted into an ass. Some materialistic politicians in spiritual guise decry the present system of civilization as satanic. But unfortunately, they do not care about the culture of real knowledge as it is described in the Bhagavad Gita. Thus, they cannot change the satanic situation. In the modern society, even a boy thinks himself self-sufficient and pays no respect to elderly men. Due to the wrong type of education being imparted in our universities, boys all over the world are giving their elders headaches. Thus, Sri Ishapanishad very strongly warns that the culture of nations is different from that of knowledge. The universities are, so to speak, centers of nations only. Consequently, scientists are busy discovering lethal weapons to wipe out the existence of other countries. University students today are not given instructions in the regulative principles of brahmacharya, celibate student life, nor do they have any faith in any scriptural injunctions. Religious principles are taught for the sake of name and fame only, and not for the sake of practical action. Thus, there is animosity not only in social and political fields, but in the field of religion as well. Nationalism has developed in different parts of the world due to the cultivation of nations by the general people. No one considers that this tiny earth is just a lump of matter floating in immeasurable space along with many other lumps. In comparison to the vastness of space, these material lumps are like dust particles in the air. Because God has kindly made these lumps of matter complete in themselves, they are perfectly equipped with all necessities for floating in space. The drivers of our spaceships may be very proud of their achievements, but they do not consider the supreme driver of these greater, more gigantic spaceships called planets. There are innumerable suns and innumerable planetary systems also. As infinitesimal parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord, we small creatures are trying to dominate these unlimited planets. Thus we take repeated birth and death and are generally frustrated by old age and disease. The span of human life is scheduled for about 100 years, although it is gradually decreasing to 20 or 30 years. Thanks to the culture of nations, befooled men have created their own nations with these planets in order to grasp sense enjoyment more effectively for these few years. Such foolish people draw up various plans to render national demarcations perfectly, a task that is totally impossible. Yet for this purpose, each and every nation has become a source of anxiety for others. More than 50% of a nation's energy is devoted to defense measures and thus spoiled. No one cares for the cultivation of real knowledge, yet people are falsely proud of being advanced in both material and spiritual knowledge. Shirsha Upanishad warns us of this faulty type of education, and the Bhagavad Gita gives instructions as to the development of real knowledge. This mantra states that the instructions of vidya, knowledge, must be acquired from a dhira. A dhira is one who is not disturbed by a material illusion. No one can be undisturbed unless he is perfectly spiritually realized, at which time one neither hankers nor laments for anything. Let's look in the Bhagavad Gita. I want to bring your attention to a very important and relishable verse that's in the 14th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. On page number 623, you didn't get a Dandara Bhagavad Gita. Do we have another Bhagavad Gita for her? There you go. Here's a description given by Krishna himself of someone who's risen above the three modes of material nature. Three modes of material nature are? And what is the symptom of somebody in the mode of ignorance? Symptom of somebody in the mode of ignorance is foolishness. Krishna says foolishness. Somebody is a symptom of somebody in the mode of passion. Anger is there, but specifically unlimited longings and desires. So ignorance is foolishness. Passion means unlimited longings and desires. You fulfill one and 20 more come up. That's just, there's unlimited. And the mode of goodness means satisfaction, knowledge, illumination. These are the these are called the gunas. Guna means also rope. They tie us to this material world. The object of yoga, to come above these modes of material nature, which bind us to this material world. We're not part of this world. We're part of this the permanent, non-changing spiritual world. Parastasmat tu pavo nyo vyakto vyaktat sanatana. Krishna says there is a world which is permanent. It's beyond this temporary changing material world, and we're part of it. We also don't change. The soul is aja. It's not born and it doesn't die. But because of my false identification with this world and with this body, I therefore think that I'm changing. And I imagine that I'm going through these changes of birth, death, old age, and disease. I am because of my identification. In much the same way, if I sit in a movie theater and I watch the movie and I begin identifying with the characters, I can experience a wide range of emotions. I'll cry, I'll laugh, and when the light comes on, I'll realize it was light on a screen. So coming above the three modes of material nature is possible only through the process of yoga. This is what helps. This is what elevates us beyond the three modes of the material nature, and being bound down to the material world. And Arjuna has asked Krishna in the 14th chapter what the symptoms are of someone who is freed from the modes of material nature. Now, all of us are in the process of becoming free from the modes of material. Well, I'm in the process of becoming freed from the modes of material nature. And when I reach that position, if I understand this verse and I understand the symptoms, I'll be able to see for myself, with help from my guru and from the sadhus, of course, I'll be able to understand definitively that I'm in this position. So here's how Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, describes one who's freed from the three modes of material nature. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O son of Pandu, he who does not hate illumination, attachment, and delusion when they are present, or long for them when they disappear, who is unwavering and undisturbed through all these reactions of the material qualities, remaining neutral and transcendental, knowing that the modes alone are active, who is situated in the self and regards alike happiness and distress, who looks upon a lump of earth, a stone and a piece of gold with an equal eye, who is equal toward the desirable and the undesirable, who is steady, situated equally in praise and blame, honor and dishonor, who treats alike both friend and enemy, and who has renounced all material activities, such a person is said to have transcended the modes of nature. Good to visit that list and see what it means to be beyond the modes of material nature. So, dhira. Dhira is someone being described here as worthy of giving knowledge. As mentioned in the Upadeshamrita by Rupa Goswami, Vacho Vegam Manasakrodha Vegam Jipuha Vegam Udarapasta Vegam Etan Vegam Yovishaheta Dhira Sarvam apimam prithivim sashishat. This instruction is given by Rupa Goswami in the first verse of the Upanishamrita, and he says that one who can control all the urges of the senses, the tongue, the belly, the genitals, mind, anger, and words, each one has a particular force of its own. It has an agenda of its own, like the mind. If you're in the process of controlling your mind in the process of yoga, which is the duty of a yogi, you have to control your mind. So our process is through bhakti. We take shelter of Krishna through our service. When we chant our japa, for instance, good practice, get up early in the morning. And first thing, before you do anything else, before you dedicate your senses to any other activity, chant the names of the Lord in devotion. Take shelter of Krishna and chant the Maha Mantra. When you do that, fix your mind on the mantra. Krishna recommends this in the Bhagavad Gita. Wherever the mind goes, bring it back. Now, if you do that, you may notice that sometimes the mind cooperates and other times it does whatever it wants. And it's very powerful. Who also noticed this about the mind? Arjuna, what did he say about the mind? As much as? The wind. He said it's like a hurricane. You know, how can you control that? And he said, it's chanchal. It's flickering. It's here, there, and everywhere. And he said it's mad. Pramati palavadridam. It's strong, and it's also very determined. So the mind is a formidable enemy in the state when it's uncontrolled. And when it becomes controlled, it becomes our best friend. So the mind has its own volition. When it's controlled by the three modes of materialization, it can become disturbed. So yoga means to concentrate the mind. One's mind must rest somewhere. And the mind can rest in service to Krishna and in the name of Krishna. This is the process of bhakti yoga. All the other senses, the tongue also, has a desire to taste many things. Like fish, you know, you just put a hook in the water and a little thing on it. Even they see the hook, they'll still bite it anyway. And elephants, they're captured because of their strong sense of sex desire. They put a female element on elephant on, otherwise how else are you going to catch an elephant? They put a female elephant on one side of a gigantic pit, and she walks around, you know. And he goes, oh, and he forgets the pit's there. So he just charges forward, falls in the pit, and they go, ha ha, and they pull him out, take him to the circus. So don't go to the circus. Don't be put in the circus. That's what this material world is. Control the senses. So vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam, all these things. If one can control the senses, he becomes dhira. And Prithivim Sashishet, Rupa Goswami says, if someone's the master of their senses, they become the teacher of everyone else who can't control their senses. They become a spiritual teacher to others. So this principle of dhira means to control all these senses. It's not an academic qualification. I may have a PhD in Bhagavad Gita. I may know Sanskrit perfectly. But if I walk outside the classroom and I can't control my senses, I have to have a cigarette. Or, you know, I can't control my anger or the sex urge or any of these things. What have I learned? I haven't learned anything from Bhagavad Gita. The symptoms of a self-realized soul are given here. Someone who is beyond praise and blame, test that one out for yourself and see. Krishna says to Uddhava in the Srimad Bhagavatam that the mind is practically, it's the most difficult time to control the mind is when you receive harsh words from ignorant people. Practice. Let's see what happens. You have to take shelter, and it requires practice and making advancement by degrees to have this degree of detachment from the senses and the mind and the material world to make actual spiritual advancement is a rare thing in this world. To carry a flag and say, you know, I'm with this group, I've made spiritual advancement because I'm with this group, that's very common. Everybody does it. But to actually make spiritual advancement and feel it for yourself so that you can sit down and relish the self within the self, that is rare in this world. That's what Krishna's talking about in the Bhagavad Gita. That means dhira. And to get knowledge, you have to find a dhira. You have to associate with someone who is dhira. And the qualifications of dhira, Srila Prabhupada is giving more elaborately here. He says, at bottom of page 73, top of the paragraph, This mantra states that the instructions of vidya, knowledge, must be acquired from a dhira. A dhira is one who is not disturbed by material illusion. No one can be undisturbed unless he is perfectly spiritually realized, at which time one neither hankers nor laments for anything. A dhira realizes that the material body and mind he has acquired by chance through material association are but foreign elements. Therefore, he simply makes the best use of a bad bargain. Let me tell you about the best use of a bad bargain. You know this verse, Tate Nukampam Susimikshamanam? Bunjana evatma krikam vipakam. You'll like this. Bunjana evatma krikam vipakam. There's an alternative meaning to this line. Now this verse, you know how to find it, right? If I say it, and you don't know what the verse is, you know how to find it. It's not in the Bhagavad Gita, it's in the Shloka book. And it starts, Tatenu kampam susamikshamana. 20 points for any person who's not done this before and they find the verse. Tate nukampam, tate anukampam, tate, and then an apostrophe, n anukampam susamikshamana.
Hey,
what page? 256? Okay. Ramananda Sakaprabhu blew the lid off the thing and it 256, you'll find it in there. Learn the process of finding these shlokas on your own so that you become expert at it. Education's not about knowing everything, it's knowing how to find everything. So this verse, Tatenu kampam susamikshamano bunjana evatmrakritam vipakam, another word for bunjana. This verse, first of all, in general, it means that one should pray for the causeless mercy of the Lord. Whatever situation of life I'm in now, I accept it. I don't become the victim. I don't say, why is God so mean to me? Why am I suffering so much? I say, I'm suffering because of my own past misdeeds. This is what the verse says. I did it to myself. And therefore, I stay in this position. I tolerate whatever comes. I tolerate it, whatever comes to me. And I continue to pray to the Lord for his special compassion. Now, bunjana evatmakritam vipakam. It also means cooking, bunjana, like you're cooking something. So with the alternative meaning to this line, I found out from one pundit when I was in Vrindavan. Bunjana evatmakritam vipakam means you have to eat what you cook. Or we have a saying in English that you stew in your own juices. You know, you made your bed, now I have to lie in it. You know, these are cliches, but this is the idea. Bunjana evatmakritam, you cooked it, you eat it. So this is the idea that of a dhira. He doesn't become a victim. Sometimes people get obsessed with this idea of how could I have fallen down from the spiritual world? It comes into a circular argument over and over again. It's like, did I fall down from the spiritual world or was I placed here by God? How, you know, if you enter into this conversation, there's practically no end to it because it's beyond time in the conception of my materialistic mind at this point. I can't understand how the spiritual nature works. So it's impossible for me to understand from my perspective in time right now. But the psychology of it is somebody did something to me somewhere. I didn't do it to myself. But a spiritually advanced person, a dhira, has accepted, I did it to myself. And therefore there's possibility of getting out of the situation by praying to the Supreme Lord for his causeless mercy. So a dhira is someone who tolerates whatever situation comes to me in this material world, whatever infamy or fame, whatever adverse situation or so-called favorable material situation comes to me, I tolerate them both. I don't become swept away by them. And I stay steady in my service to Guru and Krishna. This is vyavasayatmika buddhir. It means my intelligence is fixed on one thing. How can I use this in Krishna's service? Whatever comes to me, that's my only intention, how it can be engaged. This means I can control the mind perfectly, no matter what situation I come into. So this means dhira, and one must associate with those who are dhira. And if you don't, then if you associate with people who are adhira, means they're disturbed and moved by the material nature, then I will take on similar qualities. But if I associate with those who are dhira, who are undisturbed, I'll also imbibe those qualities. Mahat sevam dwaram ahurav muktes tamo dwaram yoshitam sangi sangam. Means, Rishabhadev says, if you associate with and serve those who are mahatmas, that opens the door to liberation. And the opposite is, if you associate with and serve those who are cripple-minded, who are attached to the material world, uselessly attached, then you'll also become infected by that.
Yes.
I know what you meant, but maybe other people didn't. I just wanted you to clear it up. And that is you mentioned at some point about getting over the modes of material nature. And then you said, well, I don't know about the rest of you, but I am trying to. So do you remember saying that? It sort of came off a little odd. And I know what you meant, but can you explain it to anybody that maybe didn't understand?
What I meant was I was speaking in the first person, not assuming. I'm assuming that you're all freed from the three modes of material nature, whereas I'm in the process of getting out. That's what I meant.
Because it sort of sounded like, I don't know if you guys are working on yourselves.
No, that didn't even enter into my mind. So thanks for clarifying that. Okay, top of page number 74. The material body and mind are bad bargains for the spiritual living entity. You ever get a bad bargain? Doesn't feel good, does it? The living entity has actual functions in the living spiritual world, but this material world is dead. As long as the living spiritual sparks manipulate the dead lumps of matter, the dead world appears to be a living world. Actually, it is the living souls, the parts and parcels of the supreme living being who move the world. The dhiras have come to know all these facts by hearing them from superior authorities and have realized this knowledge by following the regulative principles. To follow the regulative principles, one must take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. The transcendental message and regulative principles come down from the spiritual master to the disciple. Such knowledge does not come in the hazardous way of nescient education. One can become a dhira only by submissively hearing from a bona fide spiritual master. Arjuna, for example, became a dhira by submissively hearing from Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead himself. Thus, the perfect disciple must be like Arjuna, and the spiritual master must be as good as the Lord himself. This is the process of learning vidya, knowledge, from the dhira, the undisturbed. An adhira, one who has not undergone the training of a dhira, cannot be an instructive leader. Modern politicians who pose themselves as dhiras are actually adhiras, and one cannot expect perfect knowledge from them. They are simply busy seeing to their own remuneration in dollars and cents. How then can they lead the mass of people to the right path of self-realization? Thus, one must hear submissively from a dhira in order to attain actual education. Could you look up submissive? This, Srila Prabhupada mentions in the Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila, that one's advancement in spiritual life is dependent on submission. And here he mentions submissive hearing. If I hear with an agenda, I hear what I want to hear, then the result will not be the same. If I find a place where I can take shelter of hearing, and I hear submissively, accepting what I hear, then I will make advancement in spiritual life very rapidly. And what is this word submission? Submission.
Submission is a noun, the act of submitting to the power of another, the state of having submitted, the state of being submissive or complaint, meekness. The act of submitting something.
What before meekness?
Compliant.
Compliant. Compliance, meekness. What else?
To yield, surrender to the will or authority of another. To subject to a condition or process. To commit to something.
Okay. Meekness, an endearing quality. So we heard this verse, Anyadevahura Vidyaya, Anyadahura Vidyaya, Iti Shushuma Tiranam Yenas Tad Vijachakshade, that one result is obtained by the culture of knowledge in it, and then another result is obtained from the culture of nations, and all this is heard from the undisturbed authorities who clearly explained it. So let's get a few reflections from what you've heard so far, what we've heard from the purport in our discussion so far. Just three so far. Bring out one thing that you heard in the discussion so far tonight that stuck with you, that you're taking with you. When you walk out the door and someone says, where were you tonight? And they said, I went over to, you know, San Jose. I heard a class. They say, what was it about? What's the one thing that you would tell them? Sometimes people, they say, yeah, I just heard a great class. And then they say, what was it about? I say, I don't know. That's why you should write things down, too. I have in my little notebook here, this little notebook here, if someone mugs me on the way to my car and tries to take this away, I'll fight tooth and nail. Because while I was traveling in India, I listened to so many advanced devotees, and I wrote down what they said. I've got it in here. This book, it cost me, I bought it in the Tokyo airport for about $2. But it's worth millions of dollars because it has this knowledge in here. You should, this one thing about, you know, spiritual life, learn to capture things. There's technologies you can capture. There's tape recorders. There's cameras. There's the old-fashioned way. There's a pen, which you should always have. And there's a paper. Carry it with you and write it down. Because then you, the way the mind goes, you know, you might hear something that's a great thing. And then you'll walk out the door and someone says, what was that great thing? And it's like, I can't remember. I know it was great, but I don't know what it was. So if you write it down and then, you know, when you're standing in line at the laundromat, you go through and you go, oh, that's what it was. And then you bring the point out to somebody and say, you know what I just heard? And you get into discussion. That's how it goes in deep. Keep it. Capture what you hear. This is one of the important parts of gaining knowledge and advancing a spiritual life. Learn to capture it. Be a fanatic about this. Get it when you're there and take it home with you and then make it go deep within by teaching someone else. Pass it on. All right, three things. Tell me something that you learned in class. Hansapriya's first, her hand shot up. But give her the microphone because this is going to be profound.
The real knowledge development is a gradual process, and it's also hearing from the dhira person.
Nice. Worth the price of admission. Remembering that it's a process of degrees and advancing degrees, and that we have to hear from the dhira with submission. Thank you. Okay, Bhakta Jonathan, what are you taking home?
That the first step in the process is being humble and being able to approach submissively. That it's very important to go at it with that mindset. Otherwise, you can't get started at all.
Why did that stick in your mind? Do you have any idea?
I think because it's the first step in the process. So it's, you know, the most important step because you can't get to the other steps until you go through that step.
Thank you very much. Okay, one more. Raksha Jariwala, then Vanamali. Okay, I lied. We're taking more than three.
A person who is dhira is steady. He or she is equipoised. That person has learned to control all the senses. And also that person has surpassed or transcended the modes of material nature.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Vanamali, you had a point?
Okay.
When you change it back again, we're going to give you the microphone. Okay. Dainidi, and then back over to Sunny. And Krishnaprana, you had a point too? You were pointing out that he had a point. Well, that's a point in and of itself, and then you have one. Okay, go ahead.
So my first point came right at the end, and that is to write down so you remember, even if you think you won't forget. Because I always think I won't forget. It's a fact. A lot of times I was at a great class, and it's a fact. I can't remember a thing. And the second thing is I wrote down, you know, that Krishna sees your intentions. Even if you aren't at the highest level, still he sees where you're at. And if you want to, you know, it's a good meditation to think that even if you're not at the level you want to be at, if you want to be at that level, that Krishna sees that intention and he appreciates it.
Thank you very much. Okay, Sunny, and then Priya, and then Vanamali's back in the game.
Point strike me is the definition of dhira, that materially undisturbed person, and that is pretty advanced.
Thank you. Very good point. Priya, and then Vanamali, and then Ramananda Sakha.
The only thing I think that I'm really into is just to surrender completely to the spiritual master, who is the representative of Krishna himself, and surrender completely to Krishna, and everything will just flow by. It will just come to your way, and all your obstacles will just move away by itself when you're just completely surrendered and you're not just fighting against anything.
Nice. Nice point. Thank you very much. Okay, Vanamali, and then Ramananda? Yeah, yeah. No problem. Okay, Ramananda.
The point I'm taking home is you eat
what you had cooked before.
That was, for those of you who sound a little confused, Bunjana Evatma Kritambipakam. I had heard this alternative meaning from that verse. Thank you very much.
So anything? The other part is actually a question. We read about a verse in Bhagavad Gita which talks about the characteristics of a man who transcended more material nature. And they're very elaborate over there. But is it necessary to transcend to have transcended the more material nature to go back to Godhead? Is that a requirement?
Oh, yes. Because the modes of material nature are a kind of contamination. It's a kind of disease. And this colors our vision. It pollutes our intention and our way of moving in this world. And therefore, one must be a 100% pure devotee, free from the contamination of the three modes of material nature. One must come to this position of in quality, the same as Krishna. Fire can only approach fire. And when we're in that condition, when we're completely in the spiritual condition beyond the three modes of material nature, then we can approach Krishna properly. In the next verses, Krishna tells the process. In the very next verse, past the one we looked at in the 14th chapter, Krishna says, Mam cha yo vyabhicharina bhakti yogina sevate sagunan samatityaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. That by constant engagement in devotional service with a fixed mind, vyavasayatmika, then one naturally rises above the three modes of material nature and comes to the level of Brahman. And Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nasochati Nakankshati Samak Sarvishu Bhuteshu Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param means that when one comes to this level of Brahman, then he can properly enter into bhakti from that position. That doesn't mean, however, if I'm controlled by the three modes of material nature, that I'm ineligible for entering the path of bhakti, because I must start somewhere. Therefore, I start in the process of Vaidhi Bhakti, when Krishna describes, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's described that at the time of officially entering into the process of devotional service through initiation, one becomes as good as Krishna. Krishna accepts him to be as good as himself. And in that position, one no longer has a material body, because one has decided to enter onto the path, and what was a material body now becomes a sadaka deha, or practitioner's body. And gradually through the process of devotional service, one will become completely free from the modes of material nature. I feel a follow-up question coming on. You sure? Wow. Okay. Is that all right? So continue performing devotional service diligently, and Krishna will come get us. We don't, don't try to see Krishna, but try to work in such a way that Krishna will want to see you. Don't try to be a great devotee, just try to be a good devotee. And everything will come naturally, but of its own accord. Krishna is very merciful. He delivered the demoness Putana, who came to kill him. She had the intention, I'm going to kill Krishna. That's what was fixed in her mind. And she came to Krishna with poison smeared on her breast. And she made herself like a beautiful woman, and they let her right in. And she tried to kill him. She, lifted him up and put her nipple in his mouth so he could take milk, but actually she wanted him to take poison. And she sucked out poison. He sucked out the poison, the milk, and then her life air. She expanded back to her gigantic original position as a huge, ugly demoness. She crashed to the ground, and Krishna awarded her a similar position as his mother in the spiritual world, because he had approached Krishna. So don't worry also. I mean, it's up to Krishna. We're dependent on Krishna for our advancement in devotional service. So we depend on the mercy of the Lord and his devotees. And, the mood of the devotee is that I'll go on serving life after life. In fact, devotional service is so nice that even in the practitioner stage, it's not that we suffer. Well, we may a little bit, but the point is, it's so relishable to be connected with Krishna in service, properly connected, that the devotee feels that, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, speaking as a devotee, he said, Nadanam, Najanam, Nasundarim, Kavitam, Va, Jagadisha, Kamaye, Mama, Janmani, Janmanishvare, Bhavatad, Bhakti, Rahai, Tukitvai. He didn't even ask for liberation. He just said, I just want to be engaged in your service, life after life, take birth again in the material world. Who cares? As long as I have my service to you, I'm not asking for liberation. I just want to be engaged in service. It's so nice, because Krishna reciprocates. So Krishna's the Supreme Pure, and as we approach him, he can purify Putana, he can purify anyone, but that's up to him. He can do that at any time. Okay, yes.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. I was wondering that you mentioned that, you know, when as a process of initiation, a person, Krishna considers the person to be equal to himself. My first question is, I didn't understand that very well, Prabhu. And second thing is, after, you know, taking up, you know, a person who's trying to surrender to Krishna.
Can I take one question at a time?
Yes.
The verse is, Dikshikali Krishna Bhakti Atma Samarpan, means that the time of initiation, the devotee fully surrenders. When he fully surrenders, he makes the official declaration, this is it, I'm in all the way, I surrender to Krishna. Then the second half of the verse says that at that time, Krishna accepts him to be as good as himself. And what that means is, Prahlad Maharaj brings this out in the fifth chapter of the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. May I have that, please? First canto? He says that in the process of self-realization, he realizes that both he and the Lord are transcendental. Just as the Lord has nothing to do with this material world, we also don't have anything to do with this material world. Only thing is, thank you, he's never subjected to falling and being under the influence of Maya, and the Jiva is, because he's small. So being equal to Krishna doesn't mean that I become Krishna, and it just means in quality I realize that I'm qualitatively the same as Krishna, and I realize I have nothing to do with this material world, just as Krishna has nothing to do with this material world. That's what that means. And the second part?
I was wondering that, you know, a person is trying to surrender to Krishna, but, you know, there's, for so many lifetimes, I have been doing lots of sinful activities. So it just so happens that even though you're trying your best, still you tend to do certain things which are not really Krishna conscious. So how does Krishna react to that?
Suparamulam vajata priyasya tyaktanya bhava sahari priyasaha vikarma yachchot patitam katanchit dhunoti sarvam hridi sannivishtaha. This is given by Karabhajana Muni in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and that says that one who has taken shelter of Krishna, Supadamulam Bhajata Priyasya, Krishna's become very dear to him. That's their object in life. Tektanya Bhavasya, their bhava, their feeling in life, their intention is to surrender everything to Krishna. Taktanya Bhavasya Hari Priyashaha means to hurry, they're giving everything. That's their bhava, right? Vikarma Yachchot Patitam Katanchit. Katanchit means somehow or other. If such a person in that mentality engages in Vikarma, well, there's karma, akarma, and Vikarma. There's no such thing as Vikarma yoga. There is karma yoga. But Vikarma means transgressing the shastra, doing sinful activity to one degree or another. Vikarma yachchot patitam katanchit tunoti sarvam hridi sannivishta means that the Lord, because he's entered in to the heart of such a devotee and understands the devotee's intention, he purifies the devotee from any other reactions to that sinful reaction that he's committed. Personally, he does. And in the fame, well, we have to move up a little bit because now we're jammed against the door. Sorry for any inconvenience. In the Tatenu Kampam verse, you should read it when you get home. There's a very important commentary by Sridhar Swami in which he says that even after somebody surrenders completely and takes to spiritual life, although it's true that the sinful reactions are then nullified by Krishna, there may be a residual. You know, it's like when you burn toast in your house. You have a burned toast. How long does the smell last? I mean, the burned toast, you can wrap it in a garbage bag, put it in the garbage, and have someone take it away. But a week later, someone will walk in and say, hey, somebody burned toast in here? You know, burnt toast, it lasts a long time. It's the residual effects, that there may be a residual in my consciousness of the previous sinful activities. In fact, the Yoga Sutras go at great length to describe this, how it affects us. There are five different kinds of consciousness that the mind goes through, and these are called vrittis, or different states of mind. There's a distraction, there's sleeping, there's samadhi, and these all take place according to the senses. When they come in contact with sense gratification, they experience some kind of happiness or pleasure, and they remember it. That's why even when you try to renounce and you know, like say, follow the four regular principles. If you're not used to following the four regular principles, it's not your samskara in this life, and then you start following the regulative principles, your senses, even though you've stopped, they'll still remember, you know, that they had some contact. They store up that experience, and then they remember it, and and then they want it again. And it takes a while to purify the senses through positive engagement in devotional service before they come to that stage. And there may be some residual effect of some past bad habit, second nature habit, as Prabhupada describes, how, you know, I've engaged in this way, so now I'm engaged in devotional service, and now it may come back to me some way. So that also, Krishna is very expert at purifying the devotee by subjecting me to certain kinds of frustrations or miseries in the material world, so I don't become victim to those things again. In fact, he says that one who has taken to devotional service, but then gives a path thinking that, you know, I'll go back to the material world. Krishna says, well, he may be a fool, but I'm not a fool. And therefore, I'll give him what he wants, but I'll give it to him in such a way that he'll want to give it up. I'll give it to him in such a way he'll want to give it. You're already Krishna's. It's too late. You already put your chip in the game. You know, you're not getting out now. So once you're in, you're in. And now you may change your mind. Your mind may go crazy and say, I'm out now. Or your senses may go wild and on a rampage or something like that. Or even subtly, you know, you may be pulled in a certain direction that's not favorable. But Krishna is expert at blocking in every way. You know, he's known as Hari. He knows exactly what the medicine is to cure me from that particular thing that I want. It's insane. You know, the senses want a certain thing that kills them. That's why the poets, the Vaishnava poets, will say, I willingly drank poison. I knew it was poison. They put it in front of me. It says poison on the bottle. And I said, I'll drink it. Yeah, I'll take it. You know, that's insanity. Why would I want to do that? So Krishna knows how to curb me from that propensity to do that. And he may frustrate me. The story I've told several times, but I'll repeat it for the sake of those who haven't heard it and those who enjoy hearing it again, is that Giriraj Maharaj told how Prabhupada had a follower in New Delhi who was a young man who was helping translate Prabhupada's books into Hindi. And his father, the young man's father, was also coming along to meet Prabhupada and was impressed by him. And he had a habit of smoking. So he asked Prabhupada for special mercy because he said, I couldn't give it up, even though Prabhupada told him to give it up. And then after a few times of coming, he sheepishly said, I can't give it up. I need your special mercy. And Prabhupada said, you can get special mercy, but what it means is that Krishna will make your life so miserable that you'll be forced to give it up. So you can ask for that, or you can do it yourself. Take your pick. In any case, you know, as you follow the process of devotional service, those residual effects will be frustrated, and you may have a desire, I want to make a lot of money. And then, you know, Krishna will put you in a situation where you almost make a lot of money, but then you get frustrated every time. And, you know, if you're fortunate enough, then you'll come to the point and go, ah, forget it. Whatever Krishna gives me, I'll just take that. That's fortunate. And those fortunate kinds of people are mentioned in the Bhagavatam, like Pingala, the prostitute. She's mentioned she's one of the gurus of the Avanti Brahman, the Avadhuta Brahman. And one of his gurus was Pingala, the prostitute, who was trying to do her business. And one night, she couldn't attract anybody. One person after another kept passing her by, and she thought, oh, this one, no. And after a while, she became disappointed, and then she, within her heart, grew this feeling like, ah, forget it. What is this body anyway? It's just a frame, and on this frame, there's skin and bones and blood, and, you know, what am I doing anyway? And she said, forget it. I'm just going to surrender to Krishna. That's much easier. It's much easier than trying to struggle in the material world. And if Krishna brings us to that point by frustrating us, then we're very fortunate, actually. So, Hare Krishna. So, we've come to the end of our class. So, we're going to have an artik ceremony for the Lord, accompanied by loud kirtan. And then there's prasadam. And then we're going to start it up and do it all over again on the way home. You can hear and chant. When you get back home, you can hear and chant. Tomorrow morning, great opportunity to wake up early and chant Krishna's names and pray to Krishna. He's the one behind the sun. He's the one behind the taste in water. You could express your gratitude by chanting his holy names. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And for a really great experience this Friday night, starting at 6:59 p.m., we're going to assemble in Palo Alto, either at Lytton Park, if it's back together again, or right down the street from there. And we're going to have a Harinam performance We're going to bring out drums and kartals and books and prasadam right out in public. Outrageous. And we're going to chant out loud as we can, and broadcast the holy name for other people to hear it. We're going to give him books. We're going to give him prasadam and invite him to come back. And we'll go on like that. Gopremanande Ariaribo. So let's put all the books away as quickly and as efficiently as possible. Hare Krishna.